Hey.
Good day.
Hey, hey, hey.
How's it going, everybody?
Great. Thanks for asking.
It's good.
Is it good?
It's good.
That's good to know.
So good.
Yeah. So this is episode 51 of the Big Planet Comics podcast.
Wow.
Yeah. We had our big thing.
And then nobody showed up this week.
Yeah, nobody's here.
Where is everybody?
This is our second live podcast.
I guess it was not a success like we thought it was.
No, it was a success, though.
So where is everybody?
No.
We did lock them in here for the entire recording session.
We're done with that.
Okay.
With that joke.
No live.
It's not funny anymore.
No, but did you guys have fun doing the live podcast?
I did.
It was great. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun. People seemed to enjoy it.
Did we say our names? My name's Kevin.
I'm Nick.
I'm Jared.
And did we say this is the Big Planet Comics podcast?
We said that.
Did we say it was episode 51?
Yeah,
you did.
Did we say that we did a live episode last week?
Yeah, we did.
Did I ask you guys if you enjoyed it?
Yeah,
you did.
Did you answer?
Yes.
Yes.
Did you answer?
Yeah, I said it was great.
Oh, well, it was great.
Yeah!
Yeah! So we're back. I felt like this would have been a good week to take a week off, but we didn't.
No.
We did. We took one day off.
But now we're gonna take one less day off next week. So it doesn't really count. As always, you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You can check us out on Facebook.
Facebook
/Big Planet Comics.
Always and forever.
Or you could follow us on the Twitter at Big Planet Comics.
Yeah, what's going on the Twitter, Jared? I always like to get Twitter update. What's going on the Twitter, Jared?
Famous cowbird.
Apparently, we're getting called out in a good way because people are like, oh, I went shopping at Big Planet Comics yesterday and I couldn't find this book because it's out of print. And then they yelled at the publisher.
What book was that?
Psyche Yojimbo Volumes 23 and 24.
Oh, that
and they're
is
like,
true.
What up, Dark Horse Comics?
There's always at least two or three of those out of print.
They do have, what, 15? How many volumes are there? They're doing 8 through 26 at this point? Did 26 just come out?
I don't know.
So almost 18 volumes.
I don't even know what that is.
It's a big number. Comes after 25.
Oh, 26. Yeah, never mind. I remember now. And what was that thing about downloading child demons?
Oh, no. That was on a webpage.
Okay.
That was sadly not on Twitter. But yeah, we were getting some interesting...
some pingbacks.
Internet connections saying we should download child demons.
What the?
Yeah. I feel like we're a little too targeted now on the internet. They know what we're interested in.
Yeah, to people who like to download child demons. I don't even know what that means.
I don't either, but
it's like that weird spam you get that's like... vaguely sexual, but then doesn't really say anything.
Yeah.
It's like Billy Extend Tuesday, and you're like, yeah, I'm gonna click on all these links.
Yeah, they're a bunch of Nigerians with like keywords they just throw into their regular things. Like, I guess Americans like this word.
Americans love this word.
Extend.
It's like hamburger, low taxes.
Extend.
Extend.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's been going on with you guys?
I've actually been doing stuff.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Great story.
Honestly, that's exciting for me. I went and saw a musical. I saw Memphis playing down at the Kennedy Center, which is about the early days of rock and roll in Memphis.
Oh.
Yeah, that's the thing. They did.
Is that Elvis?
Yeah, I think so.
Of course it's Elvis. There are no Elvis references, but it was all about the white kind of country kid who brought popular black music into the white radio station.
So no Elvis reference.
No, that's what was amazing. I was like,
you mean Elvis?
So what was the guy's name in the play?
It's not the real guy who's from Nashville that it's based on.
It wasn't Carl Perkins.
No.
Yeah, the guy who wrote Blue Suede Shoes.
No, sadly.
Was it as good as Hair?
It was better. Wait, I haven't seen Hair. No, you're trying to trick me. No, it was actually had really good dance moves and the songs were pretty good.
I like good dance moves. That's why I like Chris Brown.
Yeah. Is that why you like him? As he dances away from being incarcerated?
I like Chris Brown for all kinds of reasons.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so that's cool.
I saw a lot of fireworks.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Did you?
Yeah.
A lot?
Some fireworks exploding.
Oh, did you? You went and saw the Katy Perry movie?
Yeah.
Wait, is that out?
Yeah, it came out on 4th of July.
In 3D?
Oh. Yeah, Ignite the Night, you guys.
Really? That's amazing.
Yeah, of course in 3D.
I feel out of
touch. It is Katy Perry.
It's true.
So where'd you see fireworks?
I saw fireworks
in the sky,
all over the place. Saw them in the sky, saw them in people's hands, I saw them coming out of people's crotches. It was everywhere.
Did you see them on the Preventor video?
Oh yeah, that was pretty funny.
there's a safety video about fireworks that has this superhero guy in it, and it's amazing.
It's been making the rounds.
It's been making the rounds. There's a part where he's up on the roof putting out a wayward bottle rocket with a garden hose. That's just beautiful.
Wow, sounds pretty good.
It's beautiful, beautiful stuff.
Yeah.
I was on a comics panel.
Wait, what?
I'm telling you, I've been doing stuff. What? I went at Theater J.
Who put you on a comics panel?
One of our customers.
Oh, Theater J for Jared. That makes sense.
It's true. They were going to ask you guys, but they didn't want to change their name. But yeah, it was after the play History of Invulnerability that's running down at Theater J on 16th Street in the district. They had a panel about the relevance of comic books, which clearly I'm not qualified to talk about.
I think you are.
Yeah.
More than who else was on the panel?
Matt Dembski. If I said that wrong.
He's all right. We've been putting his comics up on our webpage.
Yep. Then we had...
Yeah, we should probably mention that.
Oh, yeah. Hey, we've been putting Matt Dembski's comics up on our webpage.
Yeah, you should check those out.
It's called Shock Pup.
That's in our news section, right, that we're coming up on?
It is not. The only thing it says in our news is Marvel Now. I don't even know what that is, but we're going to talk about it.
Yeah.
But not now.
And so then, how was the panel?
Was it
just you two guys?
No. Esther, who works for Phantom Comics down at Union Station. One of the guys who works for the Jeppes Entertainment Museum up in Baltimore, the Comics Museum.
Oh, yeah. I've actually never been there.
Yeah, and then another guy who does, like, fan videos. And he's basically a film producer, but he's done several parody videos about comics and stuff. So
I love humorous videos.
Me too. So
especially ones involving parakeets.
Yeah, parakeet videos. Is that what he said?
Yeah, have you seen the one where you like they dance to like whip your hair back and forth?
Is that a thing? No, that's Will Smith's daughter.
Yeah, no, the parakeet dance.
Oh, Parakeet Smith. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, she was great in the Karate Kid.
That's awesome.
I'm trying to think of what I've been doing.
Have you seen an importantly relevant movie?
Oh yeah, we were going to do that in this section, weren't we?
Let's do it.
Yeah, this show is so meticulously put together. Yeah, so I went and saw Amazing Spider-Man. Did anybody else go see Amazing Spider-Man?
No, I was sitting right next to you.
That's true. You weren't, because the theater was so crowded. You were like a row away from me.
I was sitting two rows back, crying that you guys hadn't invited me.
Was that true?
I was pretending not to see you. It was really awkward.
No, you were at a different place.
I was. I saw it at the Uptown.
You were at the Uptown,
which was big.
It is big, but it wasn't 3D.
No,
it wasn't IMAX either.
It wasn't IMAX. It wasn't fake IMAX like we saw.
Oh, really? Fake?
Well, yeah. It's like a movie theater in a mall that has IMAX. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's EMAX. Yeah, it's car. We saw it in Carfax.
UMAX headroom.
But I actually really liked it.
Yes,
I think it's the best Spider-Man movie.
I like the part where he got like bitten by a spider.
I didn't
see that coming.
No, but I thought it was good. I thought Andrew Garfield was a much better Peter Parker than Tobey Maguire. He was cracking wise, and actually I laughed a few times, which I do sometimes when I read Spider-Man comics, but I never ever did when I was watching Spider-Man movies.
True.
I would do like a and like shake my head and put it in my hand, but yeah, but I thought he was great. I thought Emma Stone
was great. They had really good chemistry.
They had really good chemistry. And the core of the movie, I felt the love story was more important than anything else that was going on.
It was a drama.
It was well developed and believable.
And the fight scenes and Spider-Man swinging scenes were far better than they'd been in any of the other movies.
Yeah, there is that one part, though. When Nick and I got out of the theater, we were talking about it, where there's a part where basically, I don't want to give too much away, but... You know, the New Yorkers decide to help. And they're like, hey, we're New Yorkers. We'll stick together because it's September 11th and we're going to help Spider-Man.
Yeah. That's really awkward dialogue.
Yeah. Well, no, because that's the actual dialogue from the first Spider-Man.
Yeah, that's true.
But it was still pretty cool. What they did was kind of cool.
Yeah. And I felt smart. They did a good job of having high stakes in all the scenes, whether it's because they're like the Gwen Stacy Peter Parker relationship was really well developed. So like when she's in danger, you actually feel it a little bit, you know, the stuff with the kid in the car. I thought that was I thought it was pretty well done.
It was awesome.
Yep.
It did everything it needed to do. And
plus,
did it
Peter
well.
Parker skates now, which means he's much cooler than a comic book skater.
He can totally do because his feet stick to the board.
It's totally awesome.
A more
through his shoes?
Don't think about it.
He's a little bit of a more modern.
Yeah, Spider-Man.
He's a little hipster, but.
Yeah, a little bit.
Not too bad.
Yeah, no, not too bad. Yeah. Yeah, the trailers make it look very Twilighty, and it doesn't. Yeah,
that's
it's
true.
Not that.
But.
They also did a really good job with his science stuff.
That's true.
Science stuff.
He actually was a nerd and
he was
created
using,
things.
He was using Bing just like a real scientist would.
And as a real teenager.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, like, so it wasn't sold out at the Uptown, so we could hear a lot of girls in the audience. Whenever Mr. Andrew Garfield came on the screen, there were several sighs and oohs, so I think they did market it well.
I'm comfortable
the
enough
kids.
With my masculinity to say that Andrew Garfield is dreamy. He's no Emma Stone.
No.
But
his hair is dreamy.
He does have Edward Cullen hair.
He does.
Yeah, he
That's
looks like that guy, Robert Patterson.
Patterson. Author of.
He looks just like James Patterson.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no, I would say it was the best Spider-Man movie. I'd put it in my top however many superhero movies that you put in a list.
Ever?
It's in my top.
Yeah.
Oh, in your top.
My top 30.
At the top.
It's in my. It's in my top 10. It's probably my top 5.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah, it was really good.
But my top 5 is really weird.
Yeah.
So because number 1 is Batman Returns.
Number 2 is Powder.
Yeah, Powder. That's a great movie.
It's a great comic too.
It's not as good as Michael.
No.
But I guess that's not a superhero. That's just a guy that has wings.
That's okay. An angel.
John Travolta.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that's our highest recommendation.
Yeah.
So besides that, I don't know what I've been doing. I've
Nothing.
Been working on web pages, reading comics.
Those are good things.
Skateboarding, surfing.
I've been skateboarding. I've been surfing. I was in the X Games.
Fantastic.
That's pretty good. All right, so should we do this news?
Yep. Let's do it.
Let's do it. All right, in the news.
Supreme Court.
This just in.
Marvel Now, not a continuity reboot.
Never is.
Yeah, so Marvel Now was just announced.
Yep.
So it's just called Marvel Soon.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was just read Marvel Now.
Yeah, but so here's the basic of it. Basically, in October, Marvel's going to launch a bunch of new series.
Bunch of new number ones.
And what they're saying is... it's new series and relaunches at number ones for old series. And it's basically not a continuity reboot.
No. It's still in continuity. But it's kind of the natural progression of stuff. Because, like...
Well, that's what they're saying.
But it seems like it because, you know, Bendis' stuff is all wrapping up. And, like, it feels like it's all wrapping up. Like, it's all coming back to full circle with, like, House of M and stuff and Scarlet Witch. And then it's all kind of ending. And the X-Men seems it's kind of ending. And all the Utopia stuff is kind of...
Yeah, I think that's what it seems like, kind of the end of this era that began with, say, like maybe Avengers Disassembled or New Avengers number one.
Especially, I mean, because Bendis isn't writing Avengers.
Yes.
Yeah. You know?
And
so you think, but it seems, you guys are saying it seems more like a natural thing than just their current system of like, oh, there's a new team on Daredevil and it's going in a new direction. We're relaunching at number one. You're saying this is more.
No, I'm saying that is. You know, that's like a natural thing anyway, I feel like.
Right. And
but they're
like,
just doing it all at once.
Yeah, well, stuff like Daredevil is staying as it is. Like, a lot of stuff is staying as it is.
I'm not going to say this is completely organic. I mean, it's definitely a reaction to what DC did.
Yeah, of course.
But
but it's like one of those things that they always do after, like, a big event. They always have, like, a banner and kind of new comics.
Yeah, I mean,
this one's just more of it, like...
Yeah, they relaunched Avengers and New Avengers 2 years ago.
Yeah,
and new Avengers.
Well, this is going to be New Avengers again.
But well, the cool thing about newest. Avengers is who's writing.
Yeah, so they've got three books. Initially, I was a little bit wary about this just when I kind of heard about it.
But teams on this.
But then I'm looking at who's doing these books. So first up is Uncanny Avengers. Mm-hmm. This is Rick Remender, who has been writing Uncanny X-Force, which
amazingly.
You guys know that we like.
Yeah.
And this is drawn by John Cassaday, who drew Astonishing X-Men, which you might not know that we like, but we like that.
And that was written by Joss Whedon. That was kind of one of the highlights of X-Men ever.
Yeah. I will say, I mean, I guess he's probably a busy guy. For me, a missed opportunity here. Get Joss Whedon to write an Avengers book.
Yeah.
But
he's too busy.
I don't know if they can get him at this point.
Yeah, but it takes like 20 minutes.
The crazy thing is, he's also writing New Avengers.
Joss Whedon.
No.
Oh wow.
Hickman. Like, and that is coming Hickman. Out. Oh no! Wait, no.
We're talking about Remender.
Hold on.
We're talking.
What are you jumping to?
I'm jumping.
I've got three things here, yeah. And then
ahead.
You can
Nick
say
is ruining two of them
after that. So, and then the next book is All New X-Men. And this is Brian Michael Bendis and Stuart Immonen. I'm hoping one thing that doesn't happen with this, just going back to the Remender thing, I hope Rick Remender is not off of Uncanny X-Force.
Oh, yeah.
And that Uncanny X-Force still exists.
I'm pretty sure he's not. And Secret Avengers is still going to be around, but he's not going to be writing it.
That's okay.
Wait. So has Bendis ever done any X-Men books of any sort before?
No.
Just Avengers versus X-Men. That's as close as he's gotten, I
Interesting.
Think. Yeah, and Remender has done Avengers before because he did Secret Avengers.
Yeah.
He's doing Secret Avengers currently. Right. And then there is a book called Avengers, and that's going to be by Jonathan Hickman and Jerome Pena.
Yeah.
Which means Jerome Pena is probably not going to be drawing Uncanny X-Force.
They announced that the artist for the first 12 issues. It's like Jerome Pena is doing the first one. The second one's like Andy Kubert. The third one's like... I don't know, they're all like really good artists, so it sounds pretty good.
Yeah, so I mean, Hickman also did some Secret Avengers issues, did he? Or some Avengers issues?
He did Ultimates or whatever.
Ultimates.
Yeah, Ultimate Comics.
Ultimate Comic. Yeah, so I mean, these are all really great teams.
And this is what I was going to say earlier. This is coming out like biweekly.
Really?
And he's also writing New Avengers. So there's going to be three Hickman Avengers comics coming out every month.
Jeez.
Which is pretty insane.
Yeah, that is pretty insane.
This one's pretty huge, though. It's got like 18 Avengers on the team or something.
That's what it says. Really? A roster of 18 heroes in a biweekly comic that seems to be a Hickman-esque rethinking of the Avengers core mission in the vein of the writer's Fantastic Four run.
Yeah.
I will say that is taken wholesale from comic book resources. I don't want to say that.
Well, this is the,
that I wrote that down.
The first time he's written Avengers, I think, right? Like the mainstream universe. And this is the first time somebody that isn't Bendis has been writing the main Avengers.
Yeah, I mean, well, Hickman's fairly new to the whole superhero. Besides Fantastic Four, he hasn't really done much.
Yeah, it's nice to see him and Remender both like elevated to like the big tier.
They're no longer the young guns, so the medium guns.
They slowly proved themselves over time.
Yeah, but two guys like we've talked about before that came out of like, you know, creator-owned properties and all that stuff.
Yep.
Jared, quit messing with that mic thing.
Are you tweeting?
Please be engaged.
I'm engaged with this microphone stand.
You can take that mic stand home with you later and fix it.
Thanks, the Bendis book seems really weird. What's the premise of it? It's like the X-Men from the...
Brian Michael Bendis and Stuart Immonen are realigning the mutant team in... Are you talking about the X-Men book?
Yeah.
In the wake of AVX, as the original five X-Men are mysteriously brought to the present day. Oh, boy.
It's really
weird.
That
doesn't sound good to me.
Whoa.
Actually, Bendis is the person I'm least interested in as a Marvel writer at this point.
Yeah, right now. Yeah, me too.
He's still fine. Yeah. But this does not sound interesting to me at all.
This
sounds like a relaunch.
Well,
like a reboot.
Well, the premise of it sounded pretty interesting because they were like talking about how, in Chris Claremont stuff, they all like came into the future and they saw like Days of Future Past.
Oh, like an X-Men Forever.
And so they come into the future now, into the present, and they feel like it's like Days of Future Past. Like everything's really crazy and weird. I mean, I don't know. I have no idea what it's going to be like.
Yeah, sure. If it's good, it's going to be good. And if it's not good, it's not going to be good.
Yeah.
We have spoken on comics.
Well, it's true. You know, the plot, people do complain about plot a lot, but I feel like the plots are very similar to so much so that like, as in any genre, it's like what you do within the confines of that and how you do it. And so we'll see. I mean, it'll be interesting to see. But this is the least interesting thing on here to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm curious about the other books a lot. Like, there's a new Captain America, Iron Man, and Thor number one.
Yeah, because I don't have this on here, but Brubaker is off of Captain America. He's finishing up his run.
Yeah, and I have no
idea. Really?
Yeah, I feel like he gave up on Captain America like 6-8 months ago.
Yeah,
but
when it split.
He said he's still going to be writing Winter Soldier, though, so that's cool.
Yeah, that's cool. That's a better book now. That book now is more like what Captain America is.
Yeah, and really that's his character more than Captain America ever was. So.
And I saw there's going to be a lot of number ones. They haven't released all the teams and stuff, but
crazy.
Also Fantastic Four, you know. Who's going to be writing that now that Hickman's off of it? And there's a lot of questions, but I guess we'll see. And it's a slow relaunch. They're putting out like a few
October through February, like 20 something books.
Yeah, like five months or whatever.
Yeah, so they're not starting everything over, I guess.
No. And like most of the stuff's continuing. Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens. It's new number ones. It's not going to be a big deal like the DC thing.
Right.
It'll sell. And, but it's going to be the same people reading the books that were reading them before.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like some of these will pick up new people.
Yeah, maybe. But their whole big thing is like, we're going to bring in all the people that are lapsed comic readers. That's what they've been saying. Yeah. Well, they don't say all, but they want to bring back lapsed comics readers.
It's a good goal, but
I don't see how that's going to happen. They were talking about a lot of really weird stuff in like some of the press release stuff, too. They were like talking about the top third of the comic isn't as important anymore. Like, so you don't have to put the logo there, so we can put the logo anywhere.
Well, they're
weird.
Saying all the covers are going to be completely different. They're going to be like movie posters, is what they're trying to make them look like. So it should be interesting.
Yeah,
the first one I saw seemed pretty cool. Astonishing. This is Astonishing X-Men, but
Astonishing Avengers.
Uncanny Avengers.
It seems like they're just changing all the like adjectives.
Yeah,
so it's confusing. Like, it's like, all right. So we've got Astonishing Avengers, the Amazing Wolverine,
and the Uncanny Spider-Man,
and Uncanny Spider-Man. Well,
the Uncanny Avengers one is kind of like a weird mashup between like Avengers and X-Men teams. Seems kind of weird.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, that's it for the news, I guess, right? You guys got any other special news?
That was the only really big thing. There's a couple other little things, but nothing interesting.
Nothing.
All right. Sounds great. Well, let's talk about that stuff.
There's a Wolverine Max book coming out.
All right. It's time for viewer mail. I like that Nick's news is always just like, There's a Marvel book.
Yeah.
Marvel's that's publishing happen. Comics. Well,
there's a Wolverine comic, you guys.
They're like the only ones that made announcements this week. The funny thing is they had that issue of Entertainment Weekly that was about Comic-Con, and the Marvel one was all about the Marvel Now, and the DC one was like, before Watchmen is coming out still.
Yep.
Well, DC had a big, we'll talk about it later, but He-Man and Masters of the Universe number one came out this week.
Yeah. True.
All right, so here's a question. This is a really hard question. Nick actually took notes.
Totally ill-prepared.
We are not going to be prepared enough for this question. It's the 4th of July, first of all, lie. About halfway through the year, that's pretty close.
Yeah.
What have been the standout books, comics, graphic novels to date? Throughout history, I assume. No, I think he means this year. This is Matt Dambisky, who you guys might know from earlier in the podcast.
He's through.
Nick wrote some stuff down, so he's going to say that stuff, and then we're going to agree with him.
All right, yeah. Let me shoot you a few of these.
You actually went through all our podcasts for the year and like copied stuff, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, good.
Stuff that I actually forgot about, like Fantastic Life. Do you remember that?
I don't even know what that is.
It's the one that's like about the guy who... may or may not be in reality anymore, and it's really trippy and weird, and he keeps waking up in different places, and he's like an artist, and he's like
the podcast you did by yourself, Nick?
No, we did it.
Yeah, that wasn't one of the best books of the year, though.
I thought it was.
Yeah,
I remember loving it.
Like it starts out with him at that party with the girl.
Yeah, it seems great.
Yeah.
Silence of Our Friends.
Oh yeah, I remember that one.
Was huge.
Silence of Our Friends was great.
Goliath. Is one of the best Glad things.
Yeah, you can't just say the names of the things, though. I mean, if you're saying Silence of Our Friends, you know, say what it is.
Yeah. Well, Silence of Our Friends was the one that was like about the civil rights conflict in
Texas.
Where was it in Texas?
In Houston,
in the university. It was written by the son of the guy involved in the story.
All right, I'm going to say one.
What you got?
The King City collection.
Yep.
Came out this year, yes. And that is King City's a story by Brandon Graham that takes place in the future, kind of like a really graffiti influenced Blade Runner
sci-fi Scott
type
Pilgrim
thing about. Yeah. I think that's. Do you think it's like a Scott Pilgrim? I don't know. I think
a lot of it is.
Yeah,
a little bit. Well, it's
not as
it's not as pop culture.
Yeah, yeah.
But
another book that's similar to that and closer to Scott Pilgrim is Sharknife 2.
Sharknife 2 was amazing.
Which is crazy.
Also extremely graffiti influenced.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a good point.
It's more weird. It's even more graffiti influenced.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically like, it looks like a comic that was drawn by the dude from Jet Set Radio.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. That's a weird superhero comic about a guy who eats egg rolls and turns into a superhero to protect a restaurant.
Yeah, it's
really
true.
Good. There's like a lot of new...
Jared?
I got one.
You don't, just wait your turn.
What else you got? You got anything, Jared?
The Phoenix. The totally awesome kids comics anthology comes out every week from Britain. Started this year. It's amazing.
All right, Nick. let's go around like this because you just...
I'm just going to go with Nobrow. Everything Nobrow that has put out this year.
I will not say everything.
The best stuff of that.
Because some of that stuff is not the best.
No, but like Hilda. Yep. Both Hilda books.
Folk. Yeah, anything. Yep. What's the guy who does that one?
Well, and the second one came out this year.
What's that guy's name?
Luke Pearson. And actually,
basically, him.
Just say Luke Pearson, because the two best things were both the Luke Pearson books.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yep. There was...
Everything We Will Miss, is that what it's called?
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That was good.
Everything We Miss, yeah.
Yeah, Everything
that's,
We Miss.
That's the top for me. I think that's still
really?
The best. Yeah.
I'm trying to think what the top for me is. Nanamba is a big one for
Nanamba
me.
Nanamba was so
this
good.
Year, which is Shigeru Mizuki, who they're actually finally putting out his yokai stuff pretty soon, too.
I heard. I'm very excited.
But this awesome. It's like a semi-autobiographical story about... going to live with his his grandmother moves in with him, and she tells him all about these like yokai mixed with
monster ghost stories.
Yeah,
stuff.
Sorry, yokai are demons for people that don't know, but which I guess is like almost everybody.
You don't know.
You don't know. You guys haven't seen the yokai monsters movies from the 60s.
Yeah, right.
That's definitely one of my big ones.
I'm gonna predict one from the future.
Don't do that. Just answer the question.
Comes out on Wednesday.
Well, what is it?
New Uncle Scrooge book by Carl Barks.
Oh, yeah. Well,
that'll definitely be on there.
Yeah, that'll be on there. But yeah. We got to save that one for the second half of the year.
That's true.
Which starts on July 5th.
Apparently.
I mean, Saga.
Saga.
Yeah, I mean, that's another thing. New series that are coming out. I mean, everybody who listens knows about Saga. Also, Mind Management. It's early days yet, but I mean, that's one of the best.
Still.
It's incredible. Yeah. Whispers has been really, really good. I don't know if you guys have been keeping up.
I don't know if Whispers is the best.
Have you guys been keeping up with it?
I read the first two issues.
Yeah, I haven't read the third one either.
No, the third one's...
something makes it awesome,
the best. Yeah,
I mean, it's our. I really like Whispers, but for me, it's not. But I mean, it's. I'm not the one saying it.
Yeah, the third one gets into the meat of the thing. It's really.
If
good.
I was, I'd be lying.
It's really. Yeah, it's very interesting. I thought the premise was pretty cool about a guy who goes into people's dreams when he's asleep, or not into their dreams. He goes into astral projects when he's asleep and
right.
visits them and influences them. And
can I keep a tradition going and pick one for Jared? Because that's usually what I do.
Please
for
do.
Anything like this. Cowboy.
Yes.
Cowboy was so good. Boy and his horse.
I'm really good at picking things for Jared.
Yeah. You're like my memory jogger.
All right. Well, so the problem with this, if you, our end of the year podcast was 3 hours long.
Yeah.
Yep.
And to do on. Half of that would be an hour and a half. But Nick did pick out some good ones. So why don't you just read those off quickly so we can get to some reviews.
All right. We got Dial H. Glory has been good. Profit, of course.
You don't have to say they're good. You can just say what they are because that's what we're saying.
Sasser Country, Rio, Coma, Fallen Words, and of course, Corto Maltese. not Corto Maltese. There you go. And even Get Jiro from last week is definitely one of the best. That's it.
And more.
So, yeah. I. That's it never on. Goes, but that.
I know. Like, what the heck? Constantly denied.
Okay, cool. Well, yeah. So those are the things.
Some of them.
Yeah, that's some of them.
We'll go into a lot more depth later.
Yeah. We'll do our end of the year thing as well.
Yeah. Get prepared.
But those are definitely.
There's been a lot of good stuff this year already.
A lot of good
it's
stuff.
Very exciting.
Did you say Coma?
Yes. We just did. That, cool. Oof. So good.
Coma's so good. All right. Let's do some reviews.
We love comics. They're swell. Except when they're written by Scott Lobdell.
I prefer important books like Louis Riel.
It's time for reviews.
All right, you guys ready to review some books?
Yeah, might as well.
Yeah, whatever. All right, this is such a high-energy podcast.
Let's do it.
First up, we have the Batman Earth 1 hardcover. Should we save this for last?
I know. We try to do these usually in alphabetical order just for ease of ordering, but let's skip this one to last.
No, we got Snake Oil last. Snake Oil is pretty awesome.
All right.
So this is by Jeff Johns and Gary Frank.
Yep.
And you guys might know them. They've done stuff together for sure. They did Superman Secret Origin.
Oh, right.
Doing the Shazam backup currently in Justice League.
Yeah, and I think they just did some regular issues of Superman together at one point.
Yeah.
And Jeff Johns now is writing Aquaman, Green Lantern. He's basically
the golden boy of the DC line.
He's the only good writer that DC's ever had. No, I mean, but like basically if you look back over the past 10 years, like a lot of the big standout books have been written by Jeff Johns. It's like Green Lantern, Flash. His run on that, Flash, JSA when he was writing that was great.
Aquaman.
When he was writing Teen Titans, it was the best book that DC was putting out.
Yep.
So Gary Frank, you guys will know because all of his characters look like they're staring at you all the time. Supreme Power
Supreme
is the
Power
one
is
that
best.
I think of the most when I think of him.
Yeah.
But Batman Earth 1. This is definitely does this take place in the same universe as Superman Earth 1?
That's a weird. I have no idea.
Wow.
I guess good nobody's question. Even thought about that. I was like,
I thought.
I was
about
like,
it,
I haven't thought about this. Maybe one of these.
No,
guys
I thought about it, but then I was like, I have no idea.
Yeah, I have no idea. There's no evidence.
I assumed it did, but there's no reference to anything implying that this is a.
But that's okay. That does not matter.
And also, is this like part of the regular DC universe's multiverse?
No.
No?
The multiverse?
Because there's Earth 2, right?
No, but...
But this is Earth 1.
Because Earth 2 comes out.
But regular Earth in the DC universe is Earth 1, right?
Or is it Earth Prime?
Oh, boy.
Boy.
Or Earth 0 or something like that. Yeah.
Let's not worry about that kind of stuff because I feel like the whole point of this book is to not be bogged down by stuff like that.
And yet, here we are.
Yeah, exactly, because it's comics.
No, but it's... Yeah.
All right.
So basically... Much like Superman Earth 1, this is taking the central concept of there being a Batman character and going back to the very first time he's ever appeared and retelling the whole universe. So it's just like if Batman came out in a comic today, this is a graphic novel showing his appearance and everything.
That was Green Lantern that came out in a comic.
He did?
It's true.
Among others. But it was amazing. I really like this. This is kind of harking back to the kind of Batman Year One where Bruce Wayne is just trying to figure out the Batman stuff. There is early scenes, which I found quite interesting, showing how Alfred is introduced and why he's hanging out as Bruce Wayne's butler and Batman's helper.
And why he's such a badass.
Yes, he totally kicks butt now. It's
he's
amazing.
Like an ex-Marine.
He's like Wong.
Oh, he is.
And
oh,
also,
where's that sound effect? Miss it.
Bruce is definitely a little snot in the beginning.
Yeah, I mean the change to the death scene for his parents is like a hugely different.
Fantastic. Yeah.
And yeah, I mean I think that might be worth telling people about. That's it right in the beginning. That's
yeah,
much,
it's
not,
it's sort
not
of like
much of a spoiler, right?
Yeah, it's like the Batman Year One where it's a very corrupt Gotham, but this rewinds it back to when his parents were still alive right before they get killed, and Batman or Gotham was equally corrupt.
Yeah.
And their deaths are basically tied up in it, and
his dad's running for mayor, right?
Yeah, oh yeah. I thought that was a nice twist.
Yeah, and there's people trying to kill him.
Well, and I also think Bruce Wayne is like way more directly involved
yes.
in it.
Yes.
It's like there are these guys in the alley and Bruce Wayne's like, hey, watch it. My parents are the richest people in Gotham.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, and then the main reason he's out there is because he's like the power goes out and he's like, I want to see Zorro. And he's like, I'm going to another theater. And his parents are like chasing him.
They never say it's Zorro, though, which I thought was weird.
Oh, yeah.
Do they not?
No. He's like, I want to go to the movies.
Maybe they don't have the
because
right.
it's like new.
I want to go to the picture show.
Because they're like, yeah, because they talk about like Blu-rays and stuff. Because
that's true.
Because nobody can relaunch something. I'm surprised they don't mention Twitter in here. Thankfully, they don't. But it seems like nobody can set something in the modern day without using like really stupid references like that. But
it's better than being like fake news organizations like BNN. You know?
Oh yeah, or
broadcast
or like,
news network.
I'm gonna put that on my Face Space page.
Yeah, that's the worst.
My book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My book.
But yeah, so there were a lot of changes to the story. They use a lot of the characters in different ways, and it's not just a story about like Batman becoming who he is. It's kind of the story of. Commissioner Gordon becoming who
right.
he is. It's a story of Harvey Bullock becoming who he is.
Story of
which that part's really funny.
Yeah, Oswald Cobblepot is that his name?
That is his name.
Who
or
is,
the Penguin?
Yeah, is but he's the mayor of Gotham, and they don't really call him the Penguin.
No,
they don't. They at one point say that he's in a penguin suit.
Right, right. This is a very non superhero book, which I found very interesting. It's very like noir crime with very little superhero references, except there's a guy running around dressed like a bat.
Yeah, it's weird.
Well, and there is a supervillain in it.
Yeah, and there's a second one of these coming
birthday
out.
Boy. His name's Birthday Boy. He has
even
a,
that.
Yeah.
It's done up more like a crazed serial killer than
yeah,
a
but
super
like
villain.
A supervillain.
And the Penguin's kind of a supervillain. He's got like henchmen and stuff.
And he's got an umbrella.
That's true.
And yeah,
umbrellas
right.
make
yeah.
you supervillain.
Yeah, yeah.
And cool. I thought it was cool that like he becomes Batman just to solve his parents' murder, and then
right.
that's it. He's
right.
like, I'm going to stop after this.
Yeah, he's not like solving. He's not on the street.
Yeah.
Solving crimes.
He's right. just solving this.
Although, I mean, I don't want to say too much about
yeah,
it because so
of...
much of it is of like how he gets to maybe the more familiar version
right.
of Batman.
Yeah.
But it seems like towards the end of the book, maybe that's the direction he's moving in.
Yeah, it should be pretty interesting.
But the art was great.
Yeah.
There's actually an interesting quote from Brad Meltzer on the back saying,
right.
you know, this is the first time we see Batman's eyes.
Yeah.
And
cool.
and I think it actually makes a difference. And if you're going to get somebody to draw eyes, get Gary Frank.
right.
That dude, I swear, he draws a page and then he like spends like 5 hours drawing people's eyeballs.
yep.
But no, it's great. I don't really know. It's such a familiar story, but it's so different, and the
yeah.
ways that it's different are what make it interesting. So talking
right.
about those kind of ruins
yeah,
kind of a lot of it.
Yeah, just
yeah, but
just
I
trust us that this is really good Batman with exciting new differences.
And I know a lot of people liked Superman Earth 1, and I thought
yeah.
it was okay, but I think that
this is
a much better
really
book
better.
Than that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. yeah. Well, Nick, I mean, you were saying for the first time for you. Batman seems like a human being.
Yeah, he seems like a human being. Like he makes
right.
mistakes and he's got emotions
True.
And like you know, he has like actual motivation that's not just like I'm going to stop evil as much as I can, and then he's just kind of like a like he's like an urban legend. He's kind of like a weird iconic character that does no wrong and doesn't make mistakes.
Yeah,
and,
but unless
right.
he like is yeah, like I feel like in Batman Year One, you get a little bit of a hint of that,
yeah.
but then it's kind of like done in a montage.
Right.
Well, it's like the biggest action scene in this book is Batman just
screwing up and getting
totally
really hurt.
yeah.
yeah.
But
awesome.
No, a cool book and definitely, yeah, an interesting take on Batman. I think what Jared said about it not really being a superhero book is true and interesting. And I think what Nick said about Batman seeming like a human being for the first time
yeah.
is interesting.
I think this fits very much.
You guys are really interesting.
With Gotham Central. The idea that this is just a corrupt city with this crazed urban legend bat running around, I think yeah. it's great.
I did have a little problem with Commissioner Gordon in this book towards the beginning, but that's all resolved by the end, and I don't want to say too
yeah,
much
yeah.
about it.
Yeah,
it,
that's true. Interesting. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah so, yeah, it's like...
Good writing.
this book is like review proof.
yeah.
Because everything is solved in ways that would be spoilers, so I can't
yeah.
so I can't complain
well
about
done,
any of
Jeff
it.
Jeff Johns.
Yeah, good job. But, yeah, I'd say our highest recommendation.
Yep. Indeed.
Awesome.
Yeah. All right, so moving on to Battle Pug Volume 1, Blood and Drool hardcover.
I believe it's pronounced Battle Bug.
I believe that's right. So, sorry, let me do that again. I'll just edit this out. So, Battle Pug 1, Blood and Drool hardcover. This is by Mike Norton, who people don't, nobody knows who Mike Norton is, but he's
worked
awesome.
On G.I. Joe.
Yeah, exactly. It's like he's such a great artist.
Yeah.
He drew Power Shazam for a little while, or Billy Batson and the Power Shazam, is that what it's called. And he's drawn just like a bunch of stuff. He's like one of those guys, whenever he fills in, I'm always excited. But he's not like a guy who's really associated with a single book like a lot of other people are.
True.
And this is his webcomic, basically.
Yeah, this is a webcomic. It reads very much like a webcomic, maybe slightly to its detriment.
If you have an interest in beautiful women, barbarians, or pugs, ideally if you like all three of those things equally, this is your book.
Like Kevin was saying earlier, if you like the title Battle Pug,
if the title makes you laugh, this book will make you laugh. If the title does not make you laugh, like the title made me go, oh, you know, and like that was kind of my reaction to most of this book. I think the art's great. This should let's talk about the story.
All right.
There's not really a story.
A gorgeous woman hanging out with her two talking dogs, one of whom happens to be a pug, and they ask her for a story. So she decides to tell them the story of Battle Pug.
It's very similar to The Princess Bride.
Yes, or 1001 Arabian Nights. But she also tells the story of a barbarian from the north, much like Conan.
He's very
And how they cross paths and adventure ensues.
Yeah, and they're on the trail of the people who killed his family.
Yep,
and
much like Conan,
but a lot of it seems kind of just made up on the fly.
Yeah,
like I don't know, because it's a webcomic, so I don't know how much planning goes into it.
Yeah, you get a little bit of a sense towards the end that maybe like there's some stuff being set up.
Yeah,
but overall, yeah, it just kind of
it's fun, but like
yeah, I think that's a good way to describe it. It is not an intense reading experience, and some of the humor just kind of fell flat for me. Like it just wasn't funny enough for me. That I think that's kind of what they were going for,
right?
And for me, that stuff wasn't really hitting home.
Yeah.
But I love the art a lot,
and he's drawn a lot of fun stuff.
By
the way, Battle Pug is large enough for the barbarian and a few other people to ride him.
Yeah.
There's a lot of giant
animals. The weird crazy guy.
There's a lot of giant animals.
Like I think I think he was supposed to be really funny when he was like scribbly scrabbly, and I was just like, oh come on.
Yeah. But I thought Battle Pug was funny.
Battle Pug was funny. That's because pugs are like pictures of pugs on the internet are funny. Like you just look at their faces and they look so dumb.
It's ratings gold.
I feel like there are lots of comics about pugs.
Yeah.
There was like that other pug comic.
Really?
We got it for
somebody. Yeah, like Space Pug or
Space Pug or like Super Pug.
Yeah.
So this comic, pugging great, if you want to put that on the back. But I don't actually think that's true, but you guys could use that quote.
All right.
So up next we've got Before Watchmen, Ozymandias, number 1 of 6. This is by Len Wein and art by Jay Lee. I do want to say also this is hand lettered by John Workman. The lettering in this comic is amazing.
It's really
what's
good.
John Workman done before?
He's been working. He did Gotham by Gaslight. He's done like a bazillion things, but the lettering in this comic is.
Did he letter Watchmen?
He did not know Dave Gibbons lettered Watchmen.
Did he?
I think. It was either Dave Gibbons or Todd Klein.
Wow. Yeah.
Welcome to episode 51 of the Big Planet Comics lettering podcast.
We know everything.
No, but the lettering in this is really, really good.
So is the art.
Yeah, and all the art in this is by Jay Lee.
Oh, my goodness. And like that one right there.
And he does everything. He does the pencils, the inks, and the coloring.
And it's some of the most beautiful art I've ever seen.
That's not true.
It's really good.
The most beautiful art you've ever seen.
No, I mean, it's really good. It's
very... what Jay Lee does, though. Beautiful art.
I do love Jay Lee.
And this story... surprisingly competent.
Yeah. This is for the much maligning that Len Wein has received from us recently, he pulls it off.
Is there a Crimson Corsair backup in this?
Yes.
So it's
you're not even noticing it. I love it.
It's like here's Len Wein and then here's Len Wein. But no, I thought Len Wein actually did a pretty solid job with the story. I wasn't too terribly interested in the plot in general. I don't really care about Ozymandias when he was a kid. You can kind of see in his character in Watchmen kind of probably the path that he's taken. And it's very cliched, I feel like, the story.
Well, leaving that aside, I felt he did a good...
Yeah,
like if I had to tell the story of it, except the end of it, I thought extremely out of character for Ozymandias, and I thought weird.
I thought Ozymandias telling this story seemed really out of character to me as well.
I could see him. I mean, he is dictating to a machine or something.
I mean, and he does have books in the Watchmen. I think
he's very. Isn't he very like? I mean, he's very
narcissistic. But it's the way it's told seems weird to me. It just doesn't. It doesn't seem to fit the character.
He's telling especially it to his cat or something.
Especially at the moment that this story takes place.
Yeah,
he's sort of. In Watchmen, I feel like gone over the edge at this point and is kind of crazy.
Right. Yeah.
So I
guess that makes sense then. He's talking to himself.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe.
No, that would have been interesting if he did it all as when he's completely lost at the end of Watchmen and this is
that's
him
what
telling.
This is though.
Is that when it's
this is like right
place?
before he sets not to spoil Watchmen.
Yeah.
But anyway, I almost said.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's
these right final minutes before I undertake my great mission.
Yeah,
I almost said right before he sets the bomb off. Stupid Zack Snyder. Ruining my life.
The plot bomb.
But but maybe I'm not the best person to talk about this because I just thought it was all right.
Yeah.
I guess you guys are kind of in the same boat.
Yeah, it's all right. I love the art so much.
Art is so good.
It's so good. And, it's Jay Lee. Jay Lee's great.
It's actually really well written.
If you're going to read a Jay Lee book, read Inhumans.
It's really well written. It's just that the story's not something that new or anything.
Yeah, it's a little superfluous, I feel like.
I mean, it's like the other books.
It's
like,
a before Watchmen book.
Yeah, you know all this stuff.
I got another beef. So they show this giant map, and he's talking about how as a kid he wanted to be like Alexander the Great, so he follows some of his travels around the world. And he lists the places he goes, and there's a nice Indiana Jones-type map in the background showing where he went, and it's not where it says in the dialogue he went.
No,
it's
really?
Like the little that's stuff funny. Like that. I was like, really?
Oh, that's weird.
That's pretty fun.
Yeah. Come on, DC editors.
Yeah.
Wait, was this edited by Lin Wein? Never mind.
No, I don't know. I don't know who's editing actually the
no one.
I keep trying to call Beyond Watchmen.
That would be amazing.
This is guys, this is so way beyond Watchmen. where would you rank this in the
Will Dennis? Along with an assistant and an associate editor.
I have no idea who Will Dennis is. But amongst the books that have come out so far.
Still think Silk Spectre is probably the best one.
I think Silk Spectre was my favorite as well.
Yeah.
Followed by Minutemen.
Really? No.
Just for art.
Night Owl and then this.
Yeah.
And then maybe this.
I'd say Night Owl and Comedian for me, just because those are a little more interesting story-wise.
Better than Silk Spectre?
Silk Spectre was a really good story.
I think Silk Spectre was the only story that I was actually interested in.
I actually really like the Night Owl one, too. I don't know. I don't know where I rank these. It's kind of hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're all in the middle.
Middling good.
Yeah. They're all, it's like rank these books from 5.1 to 5.5.
Done.
Yeah. But definitely better than Watchmen. Okay, so... Up next, we've got He-Man and the Masters of the Universe number 1.
Hoo-ha!
This is by James Robinson, who you may know from
Earth 2.
Let's not do that.
Yeah.
Let's say James Robinson, who you may know from Starman and JSA the Golden Age.
Nice.
Great
books.
And this is drawn by Philip Tan. Not my favorite Tan. Billy Tan's my favorite Tan. Billy Tan, not my favorite Billy, that's Billy Tucci.
Suntan is
and Billy Tucci, not my favorite Tucci. That's Stanley Tucci. But Stanley Tucci, not my favorite Stanley. That's Stanley
Kubrick.
Stanley Lieber.
More than Stanley Kubrick.
It's Stanley and Jack Kirby.
There you go.
Anyway, sorry about that. So He-Man and the Masters of the Universe number 1. Should I describe the plot of this book?
Do it.
All right, so here's what I feel like happened.
If you can break it down, we don't want to go too long on this podcast.
Okay, yeah, that's true. So basically, here's what I feel like happened. They were like, "Hey, let's make a He-Man book." And James Robinson was like, "Okay, well what's the story of how Prince Adam becomes He-Man?" And then they were like, "Oh, well, he becomes He-Man." And then James Robinson was like, "Okay, cool. Let's do like 5 issues." this book starts out with 10 pages of He-Man cutting wood, of Prince Adam cutting wood. And then he feeds his father, who has Alzheimer's. And then Nick, why don't you take it from there?
And then he goes out into the woods and fights Beastman.
And then he goes out in the woods and fights Beastman. And then he walks, and then Skeletor shows up.
Well, I think... I don't know.
Skipping some extremely relevant stuff.
Yeah, one of the most important things about this is that it seems that he's been He-Man for a really long time, and he's forgotten everything, and he doesn't remember. And
yes.
this whole place is an illusion set up to
this is
keep
not
him captive.
Prince Adam, this is not He-Man. This is a simple woodcutter named Adam with a senile father who seems to remember being a king.
But he's going to become He-Man.
Again.
Again.
What?
Yeah. Obviously.
How do you know?
Because it's called He-Man and the Masters of the Universe.
Yeah. Oh. Wow,
that's the only thing
clever.
I thought was kind of interesting about this. It's kind of this weird thing where he doesn't remember being He-Man and he's trapped in this
I just think that's
what he's got.
A way to wrap it in a boring story into something that isn't boring. This issue is so boring.
It's I don't think it was boring because it was like I read it in like 5 minutes. It's like really fast.
I didn't think it was boring either. But we were talking about earlier. There is no reason anyone who's not a He-Man fan to pick this up.
Yeah.
No,
so none. Which DC book got canceled for this book?
No.
This is not part of the new 52?
No.
Oh, I thought Phantom Lady was going to show up in
He-Man
it.
He-Man is Earth 38.
Is that true?
No, I don't know.
He's the Mattel Earth 82, because that's when the He-Man toys came out. I saw an ad for MattyCollector.com. MattyCollector.com for all your Mattel collecting stuff.
Are they paying us to do that?
Do you guys have anything else to say about this comic?
I have a thing to say is moving on
to Hero Worship number one. This is by Zach Penn. Did we ever figure out who this guy is?
He's like a screenwriter.
Okay.
He co-wrote The Avengers.
Oh, he co-wrote The Avengers, didn't he?
Yeah. Or at least one of the versions of The Avengers
because
before Joss Whedon came in.
He is famous enough that basically it seems like he didn't actually do anything on this book and Scott Murphy wrote this book because he gets a co-plotted with Scott Murphy and then Scott Murphy gets the writer credit. So
gotcha. So he's like the idea man.
Yeah, exactly. And so this is written by Scott Murphy and has art by Michael DiPascale.
Art by picture photographs.
God, this is not a good week.
Really?
Yeah, but
I thought this was pretty interesting, actually.
Oh, okay. Well, I have not seen.
If you'd like to make the movie reference before we get to the review.
No, I wasn't saying that this was close to that. I was just asking. I was asking Jared if he had seen Chronicle.
Right.
Because this reminded me of Chronicle a little bit.
Yeah.
But I think Chronicle. I thought Chronicle was actually a pretty good movie.
Yeah. No.
I was talking to somebody about Chronicle today, and I was saying Chronicle is kind of like what Astro City was when it came out. Like kind of a different take on superhero movies and looking at it from a different angle. But anyway, Jeremy, why don't you tell people what Hero Worship is about?
All right, so this is another... all right, this right here is a disadvantage. It is another comic about a superhero universe that is a different superhero universe with a slightly different take on superheroes, which is...
Nick was pointing out that this is a take that we actually haven't seen before.
Yeah.
Like that there's this one superhero that people kind of follow around and a cult has formed around him kind of.
Never.
It's like a little bit different.
But there's been a lot of books where it's either a small group of super people or one superhero. So the take on it, that he's kind of worshipped or like a super celebrity is kind of interesting.
The focus is interesting.
Yeah. But that's the thing. So there's this one guy who got superpowers. Nobody knows how he did it, but he's basically a Superman-like person. And he has a thing called the Zenith Foundation where like people can go and like kind of be his interns or assistants and get to meet him. So there's like contests all the time and he's got a fan club and like crazy stalkers who run from site to site saying, oh my God, this guy's trapped under a train. Hopefully the hero will be here soon. Which, the kind of celebrity aspect of it I did find was pretty interesting. So, that was fresh and new.
Yeah, the main story is about the one guy who is obsessed with Zenith.
Yeah, super fan.
Goes to wherever he is to see him and is like, he wants to be Zenith. He wants to hear all about him. And so like, it kind of is messing up his life pretty badly, and then there's a crazy twist at the end.
Yeah, he wins a chance to actually meet him at the headquarters of this foundation, and crazy
twist.
And
there's hints of a weird, maybe conspiracy going on involving the creation of Zenith and what he is and who he is.
There were a couple of little funny things in here, like that Time magazine cover with Zenith on it I thought was really funny, whereas the Man of Every Year. I thought that was pretty good, but The story's fine, I think. I think it's, interesting enough, but the art in this I am not a fan of.
Yeah, I don't like the art. It's like Greg Land, but not as good.
Which is really saying something. Because Greg Land is...
Greg Land style, for sure.
Yeah, Greg Land is like a good technician, I feel like. Like, technically, his stuff looks great, but he's just not good with storytelling because his stuff is really stiff. And
it's very photo-y.
Yeah, but he's fine at drawing, it's like... Reading a Greg Land comic is like reading like a comic by the Hildebrandt brothers or something like that. They're just not, it's not meant for comics.
It's not for visual storytelling. Yeah, it's for illustration.
And this is like that. It's just as stiff as that. It's just as like over rendered as that, except it's also not as skillfully done.
Yeah. Yep.
Did not like the art either. Nobody really liked the art.
Yeah. So, I will say it's not. It doesn't detract too terribly much from the story.
It's competent enough to get the story across.
Yeah, it's like not off-putting.
No.
But it's not very good.
But otherwise, I like the story. I think I'll probably read the second one. I'm interested in where it's going just because when the Zenith actually shows up, he's like seems very different than he's portrayed.
Yeah, there's a lot of intriguing bits to this. Yeah,
it definitely seems like the kind of thing where they just want to get a movie of this made.
Yeah, right.
True.
Yeah. But it's, you know, it's written by a screenwriter, so that makes sense. Yeah. All right, so we got a couple more books left. Oh boy, up next we have The Infernal Man Thing. This is written by Steve Gerber. I believe this is the last script that Steve Gerber produced.
One of the last, for sure.
He probably, yeah. I think he wrote it as he was dying.
That's terrible. Yeah. There's an introduction by Ralph Macchio from The Karate Kid.
Yeah.
Ralph Macchio is an editor at Marvel.
He has not had a lot
we
of
should
film roles recently.
Whatever we just said, that's terrible. But anyway, the art in this is by Kevin Nolan, who I haven't seen much from in a long time, but his art is still awesome.
Well, did you really read good. The intro on this? Apparently, they've been working on this project for a really long time. They said, let's try and do this. And Kevin Nolan's like, I've got it. I'd love to do this story, but I want to paint it. And they said, cool. And he's like, all right, I'll be able to do one page a week.
And, you can definitely see it. I mean, Kevin Nolan does everything. He does the you know, the finished product, the painted product is him. And one great thing about Kevin Nolan always, I think, is either if he's coloring his own stuff or having, you know, working with particular people, he's always used really great colors. He uses, a lot of his shading instead of, like, black and white is, like, yellow and purple. Right. And it gives his stuff a really, like, kind of idiosyncratic look, and I think that this book looks awesome.
This book is full of the idiosyncrasies.
Yeah, so
crazy looking.
Onto the story, maybe in reverse, because
start with the backup.
Yeah, because the main story in this is a sequel to the story that's in the back of this issue, which is an old thing from whatever the Man Thing
70s,
title was. Yeah, I can't
80s,
even remember what
giant size Man Thing.
Giant size Man Thing, the greatest comic title of all time.
Yeah.
So
the Man Thing number 12.
So I didn't. You know, I read the story in the front first, so I had no idea what was going on.
Me neither.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
And then I actually didn't read the story in the back.
Oh, really?
So, but I can tell
I
that
really
Jared did, because he's, yeah, it seemed like it was probably better, but I didn't want to read anymore by the time
what
I got to the end of this
issue. What's going on with Man-Thing in this? He looks really weird.
Yeah, I didn't really like his new look.
Looks like Snuffleupagus. I don't know if it's a new look.
Yeah, it is weird. Man-Thing is like the worst looking thing in here.
Yeah.
Like the when I opened the book up, the first page, I was like, "Oh, I don't like the way this book looks at all." And then you get into it, and it's a lot better.
He doesn't even look like what he looks like on the cover.
No, yep, not at all.
Which is the classic design. So,
Kevin
Nolan did a new weird face for him that is just peculiar.
Anyway, Jared, how about you explain what this story is?
Impossible, but
I think it is mostly impossible.
The backup story is what was the original name? Like Screenwriter's Blues or something? I don't know.
None of us read the backup.
So I read it. I just can't remember. It's a weird title. What is it there?
Hey, why don't
Song
you
give... Cry of the Living Dead Man.
Oh.
There you go.
Yeah, which they talk about in the main story, too.
Yeah, exactly. So this is sort of a sequel where it's this guy comes who had some, you know, this is issue 12 of Man-Thing from back in the day. So in the previous issues, Man-Thing did something crazy. This guy had some connection with him. This woman had connection with. So it's like really following up on that, but there's this kind of burned out screenwriter dude. I don't even know. It was weird.
This burned out screenwriter had bad luck in his life, and he basically snaps and goes crazy and is going to see he met Man-Thing before, I guess,
and now he's looking for him again.
He's looking for him to,
and he meets some waitress that he went to high school with and is like really creepy, and that's pretty much everything that happened. He has a little Is it a little tree or a little piece of broccoli that
it's a piece
rides
of tree. It's a tree because he was writing a cartoon about a...
Yeah.
And
he
that
was just like writing terrible, terrible stuff and kind of selling his soul to try to make it. And even though he was successful, he was just a kind of a failure at the same time.
And now the tree is like his imaginary friend that rides around with him. It's like the kind of thing... I don't know.
This is the sort of stuff that like was awesome in the 70s when they're just doing like, let's do something far out, man. Like those sort of comics. And...
But
there's
almost a little more to it than that. I just feel like it wasn't, I don't know. Like,
I feel like maybe this was like the first draft.
Yeah, I definitely get that sense of from this that it maybe was not a polished, finished script. Like it was like a first or second draft instead of like, you know, something that was really worked through. Because it just, you can see things that are in place, but there's just no flow to it. And it just feels really weird.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It just doesn't work.
Yeah, like when you describe it, it sounds kind of interesting.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. When we were like describing what it's about, I was like, oh, well, that sounds kind of cool. But there's just something really clunky about it, and it just does not work very well.
And the dialogue's really weird. I don't know.
Kevin Nolan's art's great. Definitely worth flipping through and looking at the art, but I cannot recommend this book, I don't think.
Yeah, me neither. Yeah. But I'll definitely flip through the next few issues.
That's true.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm actually very curious about the backup. because I was like, oh, this is cool. But it's apparently it's either one third, because it's going to be a 3-issue series of the original too. So I wanted to like read the original and then reread this. And I'm like, well, I can't do that yet.
So if you think we like every Marvel book.
There you go, folks.
There you go.
This is definitely one we do not like.
We do not like. All right. So moving on to the last thing. We got 5 minutes. We're going to keep this under an hour. I really like this book. This was Snake Oil number 7, Witchzard. Which is a really funny thing. This is by Charles Foreman. If people might have seen his stuff before.
In Snake Oil 1 or 2?
Well, yeah. But he also had a thing that kind of went viral on the internet. That grosses me out to say. But he did like this Jaws comic in the style of Peanuts. That was amazing.
Oh, that was him.
Yeah, that was him. But awesome. So we read Snake Oil 1 and 2 a long time ago. And then
I never did.
They're really good. But each one's an individual story. And this one is about a bunch of metalheads who start a band called Witchzard.
Yeah, it's two guys and a girl. And the two guys both kind of have a crush on the girl. And she kind of likes them both a little bit in different ways.
And she's just kind of, she's trying to figure out how to deal with it. And they're best friends.
Yeah.
And anything that you would think would kind of happen from that kind of happens.
Yeah.
And it's a very weird story, but it feels like really true to like being in high school as well, especially if you're like a weird kid.
Yeah, it's about these weird kids and their relationships with their families. And each one has a very different relationship with their parents and sisters and stuff. And then it ends in a really weird way.
It does end in a really weird way. But in a way, like, kind of, you don't realize till the end of the book some of the other stuff that's going on.
Yeah,
I don't know if we should say too much about it, but like, basically, there's a thing with this guy's brother that's kind of I don't know. That's kind of a big reveal at the end. So I don't.
It's
know
kind of important.
There's a lot of paint huffing in it.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, true.
And this was put out by Retrofit, who've done a lot of really good books, and I think that this book fits right in. So yeah I think
really good.
If you were like a punk rock kid in high school or something, this will definitely seem really realistic to you.
And I love the cover on this. It's just such a cool design. It's just like the three of them rocking out, but then like this rainbow of colors coming down behind them, otherwise black background. It's just striking.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
So many people do terrible covers, and this is great.
Yeah. Yeah, so Snake Oil 7, I think probably, for me, the best book that came out this week, although you guys would maybe say Batman Earth 1.
I'd say Batman.
Probably Batman. Just because this is like...
This is so short.
Short.
This is like a short story versus a graphic
novel.
Just
too
more
much wooden. To it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Plus, I can see that.
We weren't punk rock kids in high school.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. That's true. This definitely feels very true to like...
Yeah.
Like there's like one girl that hangs out with any of the guys like that in high school. Yeah. So but anyway, so that's it. I thought this was one of the worst weeks for comics that we've had in a really long time. I feel like we've had so much good stuff the last couple months that there were definitely a couple great things this week, but I felt like overall there was not a lot of really exciting stuff.
Not too great.
WYSIWYG was good.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, what else do you guys read? Jared read WYSIWYG.
WYSIWYG is another one that came out this week. It's another long graphic novel, kind of a fake documentary about a computer hacker in the 80s. So it's like going back to like the very early days where like, you know, people are blowing like candy whistles into a telephone that somehow gives them a free long distance phone
call. That was a big thing.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like taking all these real events that happened and making this fake story about this guy who is a very young kid and grows up and becomes like the world's most wanted fugitive hacker. And it was really good.
Nice. So like Kevin Mitnick.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really cool.
What about you, Nick? What'd you read?
A lot of cool things came out this week. I read the second issue of Mind Management, which is equally awesome as the first one. What else? Avengers vs. X-Men, which I feel like everybody's reading, which has gotten better. I'm enjoying it.
Cool.
Yeah, I read a lot of stuff.
I mean, there's always a lot of stuff.
I should say that the new issue of Sweet Tooth is a huge game-changing,
really
awesome issue.
I'm so far
behind. That's what you should say, then. That's
good.
Say it.
That's what I said.
My power went out like so many other people around town, and so I spent all Saturday reading The Boys, and I read 3 trades of The Boys. I'm almost caught up now, and it's pretty awesome, except for Hylan Laddie, which is kind of crappy. Yeah.
So that's what you've been doing, is having power outages. There
that's
you go.
True. Yeah, that was a lot of my week.
In case
I read,
anybody missed out, we had some power problems around DC.
Yeah, I read a lot. All right, well, that is it for our 51st episode of the Big Planet Comics Lettering Podcast. you guys got any parting words for the listeners?
Stay lucky.
Happy 4th of July on the 6th or whatever day it is.
I'm going to say happy 6th of July because that's a little more accurate. We'll see you guys next time.